Mr. Patterson, how are you?
Good morning, Tony. I'm sorry about being in the caverns of Kobo, and I wasn't able to get your call, but I'm glad you called back this morning.
Well, whenever anyone in politics tells me that they were busy, I believe them. I know how busy your schedule is, and we appreciate the opportunity to talk with you this morning. Did you have an opportunity to watch the debate last night?
Yeah, I did. I watched the whole thing from beginning to end.
What'd you think?
Well, you know, I've been in a few debates myself. I mean, a few. I've been in many debates. And unless you really, you know, drop the ball, they normally debate to a tie. And I think there was no major gap on either side. I think the Bonero is probably a little faster talker than Snyder, so he's able to get more points in. But Snyder, being in the lead, just had to walk away from that debate without a major gap, and he did so. So I think in the final analysis, I have to give it to Snyder because he's still standing. Bonero had to take him out last night. He didn't do it.
Mr. Patterson, as someone who's been involved in debates like this, what kind of preparation goes into it?
Well, it depends. First of all, you better know your subject matter. I've debated when I was prosecutor some of the best lawyers in the country, F. Lee Bailey and the head of the ACLU and a Schwarzschild or something out of New York. We debated capital punishment. So you're up against very good debaters, very good talkers, and they knew the subject. So, number one, you got to prepare. You got to know your subject. Then, number two, if you're not a debater, I was a trial lawyer and I was a teacher. And believe it or not, teachers debate every day with the kids in the class. I think you've got to go through some mock debates with somebody who stands next to you and takes shots at you, and you've got to learn how to respond. You got to take that mock debate as a real thing and start to hone your debating skills and your response skills. I don't know if Snyder had a double standing in for training purposes, but I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm not sure how I would fare in one of those debates because I'm an emotional being, and I think I would take some of the shots personal, and you can't do that, can you?
Well, it depends. If it's a personal shot, and then you take it personally. And I'm not to say that I run in every debate and haven't come out, you know, angry at the end, especially if it turns personal. The public doesn't need to see and hear that, but if it you know, drops to that level, then I think you know you have there's going to be a certain flash of anger. But no, and as I've seen in debates, it is normally more heat than light anyway. So you try to control yourself. You want the public wants to see that you can take the heat in the kitchen.
You're listening to the Tony Conley Morning Show on 1320 WILS and worldwide on the internet at 1320WILS.com. We're talking with Oakland County Executive L. Brooks Patterson. Mr. Patterson, the first question I wanted to ask you once we got past the debate was about the budget. And I find it interesting that Oakland County is on a three-year budget. And my first question to you about the budget situation is, could, for a state budget, you work out a two-year or three-year budget? I know we're talking about a grander budget because we're talking about a state, but could that help our situation? As you know, we're going to have a budget deficit next year of $1 billion plus.
Well, a big-time plus, about 1.6, 1.7. The answer to your question, Tony, is absolutely yes, it's critical. We were on a two-year budget for a number of years. I think we mastered that, so we said, okay, let's go for three. So we just filed and got passed by the Board of Commissioners, my legislature, this past October, beginning of October, actually late September, when they voted on it. It took effect October 1, and we're in balance now for fiscal years 11, fiscal years 2012 and 2013. And we're starting to work on 2014 already. And what that gives you is a minimum of 36 months out, see the problems, what's the size of the problem, what's causing the problem. Then you can start to take remedial steps and not go in with a machete and start hacking and whacking. You can take measured steps to respond to a crisis you see as far as 3 years out. Compare that to the state that goes 1 year to 1 year, and they pass the budget, and they come in, say, same year we do, same month, October 1, and they're in office October, November, December, and then in January, 4 months into the fiscal year, which is basically one-third of the year, they have a revenue estimating conference and find out if their revenues and expenditures are jiving. And they always find out, nope, they're falling short on revenues. And then they've got 8 months left to make the fix. And we've seen what happens year after year, the scramble at the end, watching sausage being made, and So I really think that to have a two-year budget at a minimum is critical for all of us in government. And you see a lot of communities now moving toward the two-year because it just gives you that extra, you know, 24 months, an extra 12 months, actually, to make plans. I don't know how you budget out of one year, year to year, because you just don't see that train coming down the tracks.
How do you budget for the price of fuel or if labor price goes up on an expansion for your offices?
Well, I tell you what we do. We, in our budget, we take amendments to the board, again, to the legislature, every 30 days. We continually amend all 3 years to make those adjustments. So if something fluctuates, something, if there's a problem, or if there's some good news, maybe sometimes we get an injection of some capital from somewhere. So we go to the board, we amend the budget. You got to continually amend it to reflect the realities of what's going on out there in the real world. So when you get through your budget, you just can't wait at the end of 1 year or 2 years and acknowledge you got a problem. You got to continue to amend. So if the price is up, then we have to make adjustments. And if we can't afford that extra fuel, then we know we have to make some cuts. And we do.
What do you think of Rick Snyder's idea to do away with the business tax and instead implement an individual tax?
I don't have a problem. I think everybody in the world agrees, in the Michigan world, that the Michigan business tax is a lousy tax. And it's almost as bad, if not worse, than the tax that it replaced, which was the single business tax. And then to put salt in the wound, they added a 22% surcharge. That's awful. It's a job killer. Certainly, you're not going to expand in Michigan. I'm out all the time, and my staff are out trying to recruit businesses from around the country. In some cases, we actually do trade missions around the world to bring investment here. And the first thing they look at is the cost of doing business. And the corporate tax is a cost of doing business. And so we've got to get our tax burden down to be at least competitive with those states against whom we compete. So a 6% corporate tax, you know, I have not costed that out. It's got to be better than where we are. We looked at a corporate tax when the SBT was first repealed, and we're trying to, I've been arguing along with the Michigan Chamber of Commerce to adopt the tax codes from those states that are winning the tug of war with business, like Indiana, like Carolina and Texas. So if that 6% puts us right in the middle with the other states against whom we're competing for investment, then I'm all for it.
The Detroit Pistons may be bought by the Ilitch family and move to Detroit. How close to a reality is that?
Well, all we know right now is what we read in the papers, and that Mike Ilitch has signed some sort of a document that basically, quote, expresses an interest. Well, that triggers all kinds of things, that document. So he now has, as I understand it, 30 days, now less than that now, to do his due diligence and take a deeper dive into the numbers to see if he really wants to move forward with an actual offer. There is no offer on the table from anybody, not from Ilitch, not from Gores in California, not from Popolonio, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing his name right, from Texas. These guys are all basically dancing around the fire, but Ilitch is the first one, as I understand it, to sign a letter of interest. But that's a far cry from actually purchasing the Pistons or the Palace Sports Entertainment. But he's certainly a serious contender, and he may now be a step ahead of the competition, given the fact that he's executed that document. We're waiting to see. If Mike Ilitch does buy the Pistons and the Sports and Entertainment, which means that he buys Pine Knob, which is now called DTE, he would have to buy the Palace. He would have contracts with Meadowbrook, which is Oakland University's outdoor theater. It's a huge acquisition. And, of course, we don't want to see the Pistons leave Oakland County, Auburn Hills, and go to Detroit. So I'll be in there lobbying Mike to keep the Pistons here. And I think, frankly, I'll win that debate or that argument for at least 5 or 6 years. By that, I mean, if Mike Ilitch does want to move the Pistons to Detroit, it's going to take him 4, 5, maybe 6 years to build, get the financing and build a new arena. And because there's no place for them to play down there. What's likely to happen, Tony, is that the Wings will come out of Joe Louis out here and play in a dual stadium at the Palace, the Pistons and the Wings, while they sort it out. But long term, there's a real risk that I'll lose the Pistons to Detroit. And, of course, we're fighting that.
Well, that's kind of interesting that the Wings would go out to Oakland County for four or 5 years.
Have you seen the Joe Louis Arena lately? I mean, I'm exaggerating, but when I say they got 2x4s holding up the walls, it's not too much of an exaggeration. I mean, the building is old and deteriorating, and it's not deteriorated, and it's really and not the state-of-the-art facility that the Wings would like to play in, or Illich would like to have them play in. But we know a new stadium is coming. But from my perspective, there's no real public financing available. The state's $1.7 billion in the hole. Detroit's at least $600 million if you count the school system and the city. There's no public money out there. So Mike's going to have to scramble to find some kind of partnership with some of the private financing market, whether or he brings in partners or not. It's another question, but this is a tough economy to go out and build a stadium.
When I saw this headline, I couldn't wait to ask you your response. Jeffrey Figer, mayor of Detroit?
Pardon me. I can't believe. Well, maybe Jeff is serious. He ran for governor, and as you know, against Engler, and got whomped, and he didn't carry Detroit, I don't believe. Or he may have carried Detroit, but not by the margin he would have to if he wants to run from there. I don't think that's a serious threat.
And before we let you go, Mr. Patterson, what's new and newsy that you're working on?
That I'm working on?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think here. Well, of course, the budget is a continual effort. We're working on that. We're putting on a seminar next month for all the local governments, and those that want to come from Southeast Michigan are welcome. We had most of the counties represented. We put on the first symposium last year about budgeting, how you can move to a 2 or 3 year budget. And so that takes up a little bit of time. I'm helping a lot of candidates in my area. Come November 2nd, I mean, my calendar is beautiful. Let's have lunch because it opens up after the election. So I'm really busy out there stumping for the guys and gals. And then I'll sit back Tuesday night on the 2nd and watch what happens. But after that, I got a little time and I can go back and start tackling some of the paperwork on my desk.
You know, and as someone who grew up in Mount Clemens and is from Macomb County, I know that your interests lie with Oakland County, but I've always found it interesting how you thought that Oakland and Macomb and Detroit need to work together for the whole region to succeed.
Well, yeah, that's true. And actually, I think we have, if you can go beyond Macomb, Detroit's not going to make it on its own. Detroit is so burdened in debt, 50% unemployment, 50% illiteracy. I mean, this city has got itself way behind the eight ball, and they're going to need help, and we're willing to help. I don't have a blank check, and that's probably where I draw the line. I cannot ask my over and over to fund programs in the city, but we certainly can try to create programs, and we're already meeting with the city council. My staff, we're trying to take Charles Pugh, the president of the council, and some of his people, and we're having basically that tutorial on how we budget and how they might want to adopt similar practices. So in that regard, we can be a big help to the city by showing them some of the best practices that we have adopted throughout the years.
All right, Mr. Patterson, always enjoy the conversation. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Tony. I'm glad we got through this time.
You too. Enjoy your day.
You have a good day, too.